The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
I mean, come on, no one plans to get sick. And yet, here we are. My name is Matthew Zachary. I survived cancer, a stroke, and COVID-19, and I'm still here. I also survived our broken healthcare system, and I want to help you survive it too. So let's go make healthcare suck less together, because we're all out of patience. Hello, people. Welcome back to the show. A quick reminder before we get started. If you like the show, I hope you do, and you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please leave me a rating. I have a very frail ego, and your validation is very much appreciated. On the show today, Brock Yetzo is the president and CEO at the Allman Foundation, one of the original young adult cancer advocate groups founded in the 1990s. Remember those days, the 1990s? Corded phones. Miscorded phones. Anyway, the Allman Fund was one of the very first organizations that pioneered the very idea of adolescent and young adult cancer as a thing. You know, I consider Brock to be a progenitor and a mentor who helped me find my place and my voice long before stupid cancer was a real boy. So let's give it up for history in our DeLorean episode of how the sausage was made with the Allman Foundation and Brock Yetzo. Let's get started. I'm going to bring this up on the show just because it's funny. Like, you were the lone executive of a young adult cancer organization that wasn't a cancer survivor, and yet we still let you in the club.
I survived all you knucklehead.
That's right. You're a survivor of us.
Survivor of us. Well, it's too soon, but my dark humor, like, now that I've had COVID, like, I tell people, I'm like, oh, I'm a survivor. And they're like, oh, of what? I'm like, COVID. They're like, oh.
It's just that.
It's too soon. Like, people are dying of that. You can't say that. I'm like, well, people are dying of cancer. And, you know, people that survive cancer talk about that.
Well, you could just say it's the Allman Foundation for COVID. There you go.
Yeah. I mean, you could do a whole show on that, man. I mean, like, why are we are celebrating cancer survivors, but why aren't we celebrating COVID survivors?
Reminds me of the episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm where Larry David had a Holocaust survivor meet someone from CBS Survivor, and they debated the word and who was better off.
Oh, my God.
Who is this guy that Matt's talking to? Brock Yetzo, the president and CEO of the Allman Foundation. Welcome to Out of Patience. 2 minutes into the segment.
Awesome. I'll take a late welcome any day.
No, it's been a long time coming. I actually went back through the archives of the Stupid Cancer Show, and you and Doug were on the show in 2007. So we're going,
no way.
It's been a minute since I had you on the other end of a microphone.
Well, we've all three of us have been busy at work doing some important stuff. So, but it's good to be back.
What I found most intriguing about doing the show and being back behind a mic with Out of Patience is that I get to interview and talk to friends that I've had for like over 20 years. The listeners of today may or may not have any perspective, which is fine, of how the sausage was made in the 90s and the 2000s. And we are all here today, resultant of these crazy shenanigans that happened in the late 90s and the early 2000s.
Like any sausage we have, the finished product is way better than the process in which it was made. So
clearly,
shenanigans is a good word, but it was a good time, and there were a lot of great people, and I think some real breakthroughs that got us to where we are today. And God bless us. You, me, and Doug are both all still standing and fathers and healthy and happy. So that's a plus as well.
You just wake up and say, how the hell am I here? I mean, yes, but the joke is like, but you didn't have cancer and yet you belong in the club, but you still wake up like, we're old now, we have kids, and we were like young with nothing to lose in the 2000s.
I know. Well, right? I mean, you always think back, like, if I knew, if I knew that then. And through every stage of your life, you know, when you're in high school, if you knew that in middle school or elementary school, and now as I look back, I mean, 2 decades plus for me and for Ullman and you and Doug, like, I don't know if there's a whole lot I would have changed, but it would have been nice to know some of the things we knew now back then. And, you know, perhaps it would have informed our work a little bit differently, but it was a great cast of characters, right? Great cast of characters.
We were all falling with styles so eloquently and so perhaps inadequately that we just got things done at a time before the internet ruined everything or maybe made some things better, right?
Yeah, it's a rabbit hole we could definitely go down. I don't know if we should, but I'll even compare it to COVID. I mean, COVID is terrible. It's turned our lives upside down, much like the internet did. But in some ways, it's accelerated some positive things that needed to happen. And it just as COVID had. I mean, we look at what's happening in the healthcare world. I mean, telehealth. There's so many silver lining stories. But the internet, much like COVID, has also sort of exasperated some of the the negatives in our world.
For sure.
And that certainly has happened there. But yeah, it's been great to follow your journey as well. I remember we first met, right? It was with Doug in a dingy coffee shop. I don't want to, that's
no,
not
it was dingy. I will concur. It was quite dingy. Yes.
Right around the corner. We were staying right by Columbus Circle because his folks had a place then. I remember meeting around there and I was like, I know he's a survivor, but he's talking about music. He's got a CD. There were still CDs. That was CDs. I remember he gave us a CD.
This is the throwback machine. But hang on, let's hop in the DeLorean for real. Let's go back to the 90s when this soccer kid at Brown gets cancer, right? We've been talking about this Doug this whole time. This is Doug Ullman, of whom the foundation is named after his family name. But who is Doug Ullman? We can say, yeah, he got cancer 3 times, but we want to really dive into that because that's kind of a big deal.
Yeah. So Doug is our founder of what is now Ullman Foundation, previously the Ullman Cancer Fund for Young Adults. And ironically, when we were first created by him and the family, Ullman Foundation. So we've come full circle.
That's hysterical.
Right. All things, you know, as we've gone retro. So we're back again after 20 some years. But and before I jump into his cancer story, I mean, Doug and I have known each other our whole lives. Right. You know, he and I grew up together in Columbia, Maryland, a planned community by Jim Rouse. It's a great community. It's still one of the top communities in the country to raise children and have a family. And we crossed paths, you know, on a basketball court or a soccer field. And we grew up together. Kind of traveled in the same circle, went to the same high school. And so, you know, I knew Doug, as many of our friends, you know, pre-cancer. And, you know, Doug's just an incredible human being. He's brilliant. He's an entrepreneur. He's an innovator. And, you know, he went off to Brown University to study and to play soccer. I went to a lesser known off-brand Ivy League, University of Virginia, sort of the poor man's public version of a want to be Ivy, but great education. And so we stayed in touch. And Doug, in his sophomore year, was in the prime of his life. And he and I were actually training together back home, getting ready for Division I preseason. And he was struggling to breathe. And I was like, man, you're so out of shape. I mean, I'm a goalkeeper. I stand still for 90 minutes. And I said, good luck. You know, good luck at your sort of wannabe Division I college soccer program. And sure enough, he went up to Providence, Rhode Island, and during preseason had trouble breathing. That continued. He went to student health at Brown. And, you know, he went back and forth a couple times, as you know, so many young people deal with, where, you know, the physicians or the medical staff weren't attuned to that young people actually could have cancer. And he was told, you know, you're good. Get back. You're a healthy young guy. And so he kind of dealt with that back and forth a little bit. But after being persistent, was diagnosed with chondrosarcoma. And so it's a rare cartilage-based tumor that was in between his ribs and his lung. So it was pressing on his lung. That's why he was having trouble breathing. Fortunately, caught it early, had surgery, had to sit out a season. And then as he was just getting back on his feet, was diagnosed with malignant melanoma.
Fun on a bun to be in your early 20s and this to happen to you. I think the allegory here is that you're right. Back then, and this is literally back then, old man Matt saying back then, in my day, the idea that people in their 20s, teens, 30s could get cancer was statistically there, but just not in the mind's eye of doctors, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, Doug's diagnosis, I mean, you gotta take yourself back 20 plus years, was not normal or not readily acknowledged by the medical community. And I'll say the community at large. I mean, he was a college student in the prime of his life, and he struggled to even get that diagnosis, which is, as you can appreciate, you know, Matt, so common within the young adult community. And even to this day, we've made progress. And so he had cancer three times before the age of 21. And that was unheard of back then. But people were getting it. It just wasn't being acknowledged or really talked about. And so he struggled as a young college student to find a home, find an organization, find a community, all those things. There lies the reason that, you know, he yourself with Stupid Cancer and so many other organizations that have since, you know, come on the scene and joined the movement, why he created it. For him, it was personal. You know, he wanted to be able to connect with other folks that understood and could relate to what he was dealing with. And then I think beyond that, it became more than personal. It was, you know, how do we not just help me out, but help, there's thousands. And now we know, I don't know what's the latest number, how many annually are diagnosed?
It went from 70 to 72 to 76. I think, yeah. On the Stupid Cancer side, it's 80 now, but I'm going to go with population adjusted to be optimistic. Okay.
I thought we were making progress, and then there's more people getting diagnosed every year.
I think just that there's more people. So yeah, there's more people. There's more people getting diagnosed.
Yeah. So, So, you know, he and the family, and so it's so true to Doug. I mean, he's just a fighter. He's an entrepreneur, an innovator. They wanted to do something about solving this problem. And I always say, you know, people that have known Doug as long as I have, and even yourself, and you know the, you know, what he's made of and how he operates and the success he's had in the cancer space, it could have been anything. I mean, I think fortunately for cancer patients and survivors, young adults, it was actually good. It was cancer, because he's done so much great work and the organization was born and we've grown above and beyond one person. But it could have been another issue or ailment, and he would have tackled it just as, you know, as you have, and so many young cancer survivors have sort of tackled the AYA issue and started organizations that have done such great and important work.
I mean, it's also really important to recognize that there were really no other young adult cancer specific groups at the time. And yet, in the late 90s, there was this like just coincidental outcrop of five major groups that just spawned. There was a group called First Descents, which was the first young adult cancer like retreat adventure camp type experience. There was the Ullman Fund or the Ullman Foundation that became the fund that became the foundation. There was the Young Survival Coalition, which was young women with breast cancer. Yeah. There was Sharsheret, which was young women with breast cancer who were Jewish. And then there was like Vital Options, which is a terrestrial radio show about cancer. And like this, like, I don't know who watered the grass in the late 90s, but and none of you knew each other. And it just all kind of manifested in an extraordinary way. When did you start to meet these other people? Was there a convalescence of, oh, my God, you're here, too?
So Doug, you know, after starting the organization, and he ran it for a couple years as a college student, and then he got a grant from, you know, the Echoing Green Foundation based in New York. Cheryl Dorsey still there, still runs that foundation, do incredible work investing in entrepreneurs with social impact startups. So he got a 2-year grant to kind of get Ullman off the ground out of college. And then, you know, he was presented with this unique opportunity to go work for another organization that I always say was bigger, not necessarily better.
Right.
But an organization at the time called the Lance Armstrong Foundation. And so he actually, him and Lance became friends or acquaintances. They're both young adult survivors. They're both athletes, were diagnosed at the same time. And he actually read an article about him in the Brown Alumni Magazine, sharing Lance's story. And Doug, it so resonated with him. You know, it didn't matter. It was Lance. It was another. And at that time, it wasn't the Lance we all know.
Right. Yes. It was early Lance.
Yeah. It was early Lance. Like before, you know, anyone even followed cycling or followed him. And Doug's like, this is another young person, a guy, an athlete dealing with this. And he actually reached out to the writer of that article, the reporter, and said, hey, great, great article. Like, would you mind connecting me with this guy? I'd just love to share and be, you know, be together. And so him and Lance went back and forth, and then Doug and I went down to the Ride for the Roses in Austin, Texas in 2000. Was our first venture down there.
I don't know if this story is true, but they say when the legend becomes fact, print the legend. I recall Doug telling me a story, or maybe I heard him speak at some conference somewhere about how I think Lance sent him a note in the hospital or something. And it was like Doug's like, who the hell is Lance Armstrong? And then that's kind of how their friendship started. Is there any reason or rhyme or truth to that?
I think there is some truth. I don't know. I can't vouch for all the specifics, but they definitely, I think he might've reached out to him because I know there's an email somewhere. I still have a copy of it because it was always in our office that, you know, he said, hey, Doug, like, you know, remember we're the lucky ones, right? As cancer, it gives us perspective that no one can have. And, yeah. And so, you know, in 2000 was the first time that Doug, you know, got to meet Lance and learn more about his foundation, this small little foundation that he started in Austin, Texas, that was, you know, really based around survivorship and a bike ride. And, you know, we all know the story well, and Lance kind of took cancer as well as AYA cancer, being an AYA survivor, to a different level, different stratosphere. And regardless of your opinions of how he got to where he went, I can tell you as a nonprofit executive and a cancer advocate, you know, what he did for the cancer movement and specifically the AYA cancer movement was transformative. And so back to your question, long-winded answer, like how did, I think Doug's opportunity and ability to be part of, and then eventually became, you know, the president CEO of the Lance Armstrong Foundation, which then became Livestrong, you know, Doug carried that AYA torch with him and had a platform that all the AYA groups, Ullman included, Stupid Cancer, First Ascent, you know, he invited them all to kind of come be a part of this this opportunity to raise our flag, to yell at the top of the mountain, all the different things that we did, some I won't mention,
well,
to make
yeah.
some noise about
things you
about
can't
AYA.
Get away with anymore. Exactly.
Yeah. So, I mean, when I would say, I mean, probably like mid, I mean, when did we first connect? I mean, mid, early 2000s? I'm trying to remember.
I'm
terrible with dates.
If I were to like trace the extension cord back to the outlet in the wall, it would go to a guy named Craig Lustig, who you know.
Yeah.
And Craig found me on a Columbia listserv after I had given a piano concert for a Relay for Life at NYU in 2002. And it was around that time that I first discovered another organization of the time called Planet Cancer, which yeah. I was the first like funny cancer website that I ever read. Like you never think funny in cancer. And I jumped down this rabbit hole through Craig and these other luminary names that we don't have to get into because there's so many of them. But it was just an extraordinary moment in time to see collaboration. I mean, I walked into it as like, oh, is it always like this? No, it wasn't always like this. But I will give Livestrong credit where credit is due because the culture that they brought to bear as an organization, again, irrespective of any dirty laundry that's floating around, was one of we raise each other up. And that was my biggest, I guess, excitement of joining all of you guys, not knowing what the hell I'd wind up doing.
Yeah, I agree. We came there from different perspectives, different pathways, but it elevated us all, and we all were sort of in the same sandbox together trying to do something, the same thing, maybe just doing it a little bit differently. It was a great moment in time.
Back with our guest after the break.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
So let's get into the nitty-gritty of what the Allman Foundation, then the Allman Cancer Fund, then the Allman Foundation, what have you been pragmatically doing? I know the answer to this, but for the sake of the listeners, it's just so important to understand how we kind of started from nothing. All of us started from nothing. And here we are 20 years later, and young adult cancer is mainstream oncology. We still have work to do because the people still get sick. But from nothing, you were the first organization that had grants and you worked on navigation. Talk about the early days of just proving the point that this was meritable.
You know, I'd say the early days was just doing whatever sort of came at us, you know, like any cancer diagnosis. And thank God I've never personally faced it. But, you know, I've had loved ones, I've had family members. It was more just you're blocking and tackling and responding to every obstacle, every hurdle, every piece of news you're getting. You're definitely not, you're not driving the car, right? You're just sort of like in the back seat, just dodging, you know, for any parent out there, you're just dodging the things that your kids are throwing at you. And so that was a lot of what I think Allman was doing in the early days where there was no cohesive like roadmap or strategy. It was just like herding cats to find out, hey, are we the only one? No, we're not. There's other people with young one cancer. Oh, there's other organizations. And it really wherever the greatest need presented itself. And so one of our first, you know, programs was a support group. What do you get? I mean, we want to build community. We want people not to be alone. So let's get a support group going. And the next thing was, hey, Doug was a college student. You know, fortunately, his ability to continue to pursue higher education was not impacted, but so many young people get cancer, they're in their college years, and there's an impact there, an emotional, practical, financial. So we started a college, you know, scholarship program that has grown over the past 20 years to award close to $1 million to young adults in all 50 states attending, you know, 200 plus universities. And so I'd say the first, like, almost the first 5 to 8 years of our existence was really just not flying by the seat of our pants, but responding to like where the greatest need presented itself and what was the most compelling. And I think where that shifted for, I can speak for Allman and perhaps hopefully the movement where we've had more incremental change really was a result of some of the work of Livestrong and, you know, the Progress UU Group report that was published in, was it 2006? And then there were the President's Cancer Panel, town hall meetings. And so I know for Allman, like we took that as, hey, here's an opportunity to listen to what experts are saying, like not just, you know, what cancer patients and survivors, which that's important. And we took that. And that was part of those processes to basically take a swath of, you know, all the stakeholders are saying are the greatest needs. clinically, scientifically, you know, from an advocacy standpoint, from a patient care standpoint, and identify the areas that we think we can champion and have the greatest impact. And so for us, you know, the past decade plus now has been really focused on, you know, patient navigation, meeting patients where they are. And so we've now been working with some of the top cancer centers in the country. We're based in Baltimore, Maryland. So we have programs running at institutions like Johns Hopkins and University of Maryland, both, you know, comprehensive NCI designated cancer centers. We've been working with our military at Walter Reed National Military Medical Center, where we have licensed, trained AWA navigators that are embedded in the institution and have developed a community and a program within that hospital that has changed the culture of how they treat and meet young cancer patients' needs. And so that's just one example, but I think Ullman has really looked to the community of, you know, all the people that have been working in this, both in the labs, in the hospitals, and other advocates to identify, hey, where can we have the greatest need? Who's doing other great work? And I think, you know, you're a great example. Like, you know, when stupid cancer came on the scene, I mean, we said we're definitely not getting into the business of hosting massive conferences where we're bringing tons of survivors and healthcare professionals about it, because Matthew's doing it so great. And so I think that was back to like the good old days. Like, it was awesome to see how so many individuals and organizations came together. And sometimes just by like process of elimination or just like people found like their place of where they could move the needle for the movement. And so Ullman, you know, navigation's been sort of a flagship program of ours. We more recently have identified a huge need that I believe is only going to get larger with hospitality care. So housing for young cancer patients. You're seeing treatment protocols for young adults. Many of them are pediatric protocols. They're now being extended to 18, 20, 25-year-olds that are more aggressive and more demanding and are presenting challenges for young cancer patients to get their treatment because there's no housing. And a lot of the existing infrastructure of hospitality homes cut off at 18 and 21. So that's, we just opened Ullman House, which is a beautiful, you know, 13,000 square foot facility in Baltimore City, just a stone's throw from many of the cancer centers I just mentioned, where young people can come from all over the country. They've come from 13 different states already to be a part of community and have free housing and care and support while they're getting life-saving treatment.
I want to pivot and spend the remaining amount of our time talking about leadership. Yeah. And, you know, without dating you per se, you're one of the longest standing executives in nonprofit cancer to begin with, but in young adult cancer specifically. And you have, I mean, I kind of left when I did because I wanted to, you know, whatever, but like you're still doing this with so much passion. And again, there is a never ending need to fulfill the issues at hand. But over the course of the last 20 plus years that you've been running this organization, have there ever been moments in time where you said, like, mission accomplished, or like, we've done enough? Or, I mean, the only reason I asked that question, I'm not convincing you to leave in any way, is, or just agree or disagree with me on this one point. I feel like when we started all this in the early 2000s, when I got into the game and we were all, you know, running offense with each other, mm-hmm. instead of fighting over get off my lawn, which is every other organization, that we were pushing a boulder up a hill in the hopes of building equity and parity for an age-specific concern. And at some point, that boulder reached the top of the hill and is now kind of coasting in a sense. And I was joking that young adult cancer now sucks as equally as other cancers, irrespective of the unique age issues that you face. Do you get a sense that we're in a better place now? The boulder isn't maybe so far down the hill, or it's up the hill and there's just a smaller hill to push it up?
Absolutely. I mean, I think having been a part of the movement for two decades, like we always used to say, hey, you know, no one knows about AWA cancer and until we're on the front cover of a national publication. And me, I've never done that, but I mean, I know people that have been on Time magazine. So, you know, we certainly,
Oh, you,
we, we're there. The bolt we've been made. But yeah, I think we've made such progress, and so I don't think we're on the same level playing field as some other cancers and populations with cancer. I mean, yeah, I think we still have some catching up to do to some of the other movements. I mean, breast cancer, they've done incredible job of both raising awareness and improving protocols and care, decreasing mortality. So I think there's still work to be done. But I think where your question was is like, at what point do you or do I like, you know, say, hey, like, job well done. It's my turn and I can move on to something else. What I can tell you is I would feel if my time came to move out of AWA cancer, move out of Ullman or move on to something else, I would feel really good, much better today than I did, you know, a decade ago. I think we've made a lot of progress, and we're the movement, the AWA cancer patient is in a much better place than they were. I mean, between Ullman, TCA, some other, I mean, we're talking 40, 50 cancer centers that have AWA programs of some way, shape, or form. There were none 20 years ago. So I feel much better. But with all that said, like, cancer still sucks.
Yes,
like
it does.
It's gonna kill more Americans than I think it's what the second leading or maybe third leading disease killer in our country. And so there's still a lot of hurt and a lot of pain that's caused by this disease. And you know, I think what has kept me engaged at Ullman, and I'm really proud of the kind of work we do, is we're like 1 degree or not even a degree away from the patient. You know, we have navigators in the hospital. Now we have these patients staying in our home. And so it's every day I wake up with a constant reminder of how devastating and crappy cancer can be to anyone. And so it's for me, it's just continue to serve as motivation. And there's always something new that's coming up that we as an organization or as a movement can try to tackle. So not to say that my time won't come or I've already aged out. I'm out of the age group.
Yeah. Like when I turned 40, I'm like, crap, do I still belong here? Exactly.
I know. I'm one of a few people, you know, that has a bunch of kids. But it's been a great ride. And, you know, I'm still enjoying doing it. And so until I'm ready or I'm asked to leave, I'm going to keep plugging away and trying to, you know, do as much as I can to keep moving the needle, as we always used to say, move the needle for AWA cancer.
All right. Final question. It's kind of loaded, but I think you can keep it pretty brief. Cause I've done many episodes with other nonprofit leaders, and I like to hear from executives and like COVID life hacks for leaders in the nonprofit space. How do you manage your own mental health, your family, while still leading and keeping confidence amongst your tribe?
Wow. You could have given me a heads up on this one.
You have 30 seconds. Go.
Wow. Exercise. I think what COVID, I mean, we're doing remote work, so it's afforded me the opportunity, and now is exercise every single day. And something I would have liked to say I did before COVID, but I just, the commute and the bustle and the hustle just didn't allow me to do that. And then for me, it's leaning into the things that ground me and matter most. And that's my kids, my wife, my family, my time. Right now I'm at a soccer practice recording this from the car. 18 months ago, I would have been at a networking event with a cocktail in my hand, trying to pass business cards out.
Right.
So I'm leaning into those moments that, for me, I think make me a human being, and indirectly, I think a better leader of our organization.
What is the Ullman Foundation's website? I'm sure the URL changed since the name changed for the 14th time.
It is www. That's still there.
You can stay www all you want. I don't think you need that, but I'm gonna allow it.
It's Ullman Foundation, and Ullman, so just foundation.org.
And there you have it. Brock Yetso, president and CEO of the Ullman Foundation at ullmanfoundation.org. Thank you, my old esteemed friend that I'm older than. So there's that too.
Thank you, but I got one kid on you.
You do. Godspeed, my friend. More to come.
Thank you. Appreciate the time.
That's all for today, folks. If you like today's show, be sure to subscribe, leave a review, follow us on social, and tell all your friends to listen. Out of Patience with Matthew Zachary is a product of Offscript Media. Our executive producer is Matthew Zachary. Our senior producers are Brianna Seeley, Jen Oranger, and Andrew McDowell. It is mixed and edited by Brianna Seeley. Our theme music is by the Mike Van Allen Quintet and by Mara. For advertising and media inquiries, email media@offscript.com. Hit us up at contact@offscript.com to share comments, feedback, and make recommendations. For more information, visit offscript.com.